Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
As you probably know, Georgia has been on a bit of a wild ride when it comes to recruiting quarterbacks for the class of 2018. Over the weekend, Georgia extends its 18th offer for the class of 2018, this time coming to Tanner Mordecai, a quarterback out of Texas. Now, this is obviously ridiculous. That's a huge number of players to be offered at that position, and it can almost be a bit confusing exactly what is going on here. Why has Georgia offered so many guys at the quarterback spot in particular? Well, when Jeff Sintel was on Dog Nation Daily on Friday, he kind of explained exactly what the strategy here is, why Kirby Smart has extended so many of those offers. So as a way of setting up our conversation for today, let me go back in time to Friday, and let's hear Jeff's explanation one more time.
You have to throw out those offers like fishing lures. And what happens is you throw out the offer, and then if the kid is receptive, he starts communicating, you have a really good first date, so to speak, and then the young man with an offer comes to Georgia and visits, then Georgia can start building the blocks of the relationship that way. And for a lot of times, they're trying to get in where some other school's already gotten quite cozy. But a lot of times, these kids won't come visit without the offer or without the promise of, hey, we want to see you, we want to get to know you, and if you come, there's pretty good chance you'll get the offer. So it's almost like Georgia just kind of treats that as a sales lead to kind of get in the door and then start working on a prospect.
So listen, I mean, at face value, what Jeff has to say there makes a lot of sense. But what Georgia fans who follow this process closely also understand is in the midst of making these 18 different offers for 18 different quarterbacks, some of these have probably come too late. An example of that is Jaren Williams, the three-star quarterback from Lawrenceville, Georgia, goes to Central Gwinnett High School, a guy that has kind of emerged on the scene as of late. Georgia makes its offer, but unfortunately, the key phrase there is late. Georgia may have offered Jaren Williams in this instance too late. Here's a little more from Jeff Sintel on that.
Let's just go straight at it. I mean, here's what it is. Georgia offered like 14 other out-of-state quarterbacks before they get to Jaren Williams, man. I mean, these smart families that are plugged into recruiting, they realize this and they see this.
Yeah, they do, and then Jeff went on to explain a little more about why the offer to Williams, in this case, probably just comes too late for Georgia fans to get too excited about maybe Williams being a part of the 2018 class.
He decommitted from Kentucky about 10 months ago, and for that Georgia fan that thinks, can Georgia get into this race, what happens a lot of times is there was an offer or two that he had prior to the decommitment that forced him to reevaluate things. These offers that come in after the decommitment don't usually pan out.
Now, in the case of Williams, there may actually be a pretty good explanation for why Georgia's getting in on him so late. I thought that Chris Kirsch from SECCountry.com had a great piece about Williams the other day from the Alabama perspective, talking about how when Williams had gone to a rivals camp a couple years ago, the thought was he might not even be good enough to play quarterback at the college level. So here this young man has worked very hard, very, very quickly to kind of get himself in the good graces of college recruiters. He's sort of risen fast, and maybe so fast that, in this case, Georgia was just a little late noticing. As a matter of fact, Jeff Sintel also talked about just how much Williams has improved recently to even be in this position.
Give Georgia credit, though. I mean, they go there, Cheney sees him, blown away, immediately says he's got an offer, goes back, gets it signed off on, I bet, and, you know, then the offer comes. So they recognize the skills, but let's be fair and say the other side of this is Jaren Williams has gotten a lot better over the last year, over the last 16 months of his progression at quarterback. And the quarterback that Georgia saw when they evaluated him this spring, they would have offered that guy last spring, except that he probably wasn't that good yet.
Yeah, so listen, let's recap where we've been to sort of figure out where we're going. Georgia has offered a lot of quarterbacks, 18 different guys to the class of 2018, and at least the case of Jaren Williams and probably others, Georgia may have gotten in on some of these guys a little too late. So that's what everybody sort of understands that follows this process, but the real question is, so where do you go from here? What does Georgia do now? And this is where I think things get pretty interesting, and this is the real point that I want to bring up on the show today, because in the midst of the conversation with Jeff about this on Friday and talking about where Georgia might have gone wrong when it comes to the 2018 recruiting class and the quarterback position in particular, Jeff also kind of points the way forward. I think for a lot of Georgia fans, this is going to be pretty exciting, because what Jeff does is offer some advice to Georgia about what it ought to do now. Since some of these three-star quarterbacks are kind of interested in going other places, maybe they feel like they are going to get more love from the schools that have been interested in them more often. Jeff says, okay, don't troll down at the bottom then of the quarterback pecking order. How about you climb all the way back to the top and refocus your efforts on the three best quarterbacks, arguably in the country, certainly among the best in the country, that all happen to be from the state of Georgia. Here's Jeff's intel on that.
Yes, me. I think what Georgia's doing, maybe they'd have a lot more success rather than going to the bottom of the food chain on these guys. They might as well just start right at the very top, kick the tires on Trevor Lawrence, kick the tires on Emory Jones, kick the tires really, really hard on Justin Fields, because things can change through the course of a college football season. What happens if a Jake Fromm splits time with Jacob Eason? That's what all the Georgia fans focus on. But then what happens if Hunter Johnson claims the job at Clemson? What happens if there's no clear guy at Clemson? What happens if Ohio State, there's a guy that comes in and already shows he's the man, and maybe it's not JT Barrett? A lot of things can change with these depth charts, and what any of these elite quarterbacks would want to see maybe is a brighter chance. I think the relationships Georgia has with those guys at the top, even though those are going to be long shots, will probably pay off bigger in the end.
I think what Jeff's bringing up there is both an interesting point and an accurate point. Think about Trevor Lawrence, currently committed to Clemson, who says that's completely over and done with. The same thing for Emory Jones, currently committed to Ohio State, and Justin Fields, currently committed to Penn State. Maybe Georgia's best chance at getting a quarterback for the class of 2018 is to circle back on one of these elite in-state products that Georgia's already had its relationship set up with, and, you know, let those guys know that if your relationship changes with the school that you're currently committed to, then you know what? Georgia's still going to be here for you. We're going to hold that spot for you in the class of 2018. And there are a couple of reasons why Georgia might be able to do this in a way that other schools in the South and around the country might not be able to do. Because first of all, while I'm as guilty of anyone as occasionally panicking about the current state of the 2018 recruiting class, the overall situation of the Georgia program is not one where they need to panic, particularly at quarterback. Georgia has Jacob Eason. He was Gatorade Player of the Year for the class of 2016. Georgia has Jake Fromm, an elite player from Georgia in 2017, who in his first spring practice looked to live up to the hype that everyone assumed that he would be coming out of high school. With those two quarterbacks already on the roster, maybe there's a chance that Georgia has a luxury that other schools don't necessarily have. In fact, Jeff Sintel on Friday also brought that very point.
What we stressed before is everybody wants to talk about doom and gloom, and it's May, and the sky is falling. But you got to remember, Georgia is not recruiting out of urgency here. They're recruiting out of a luxury spot where they're really looking for their third-team quarterback.
And it's not only that. It's not just the luxury of already having what you think are two very good quarterbacks on your roster that allow you to kind of be a little choosier about who you might want to get involved with for 2018. There's also a case, at least when it comes to Emory Jones and Justin Fields, that Georgia can make an offer that some schools aren't going to be able to make. There's some schools out there that already have a lot of quarterbacks that do what Jones does and do what Fields does. There are already some programs from the South that have a multitude of dual-threat quarterbacks on the roster. Georgia, though, for the most part, has only recruited pro-style quarterbacks in recent years. So the dual-threat guy at Georgia has a chance to work his way up the depth chart in a way that might not exist at other schools. Here's Jeff Sintel on that point one more time.
I still think Georgia has something different to offer, where Alabama has stacked up two dual threats and is going after more dual threats. Georgia has the pro-style quarterbacks, and they're looking for the change of pace quarterback, where a big-time prospect like a Jones, like a Fields, can look at Georgia and say, okay, they don't have a guy quite like me there, so that's my chance there.
So, listen, here's the bottom line for me. The phrase that we have heard over and over again when it comes to Georgia's 2018 recruiting class and why so many recruits are not – choosing Georgia yet, not committing to the G, so to speak, is because, as it's been explained, they're taking a wait-and-see approach. They want to see what happens on the field this fall before they choose Georgia. And there's one aspect of that discussion that makes it sound like a negative for the Dogs. But the truth is, and it's also potentially a positive as well, the wait-and-see approach also taking place at other schools may open the conversation back up for one of those elite quarterbacks like Trevor Lawrence, Emory Jones, Justin Fields, to maybe reconsider Georgia. And who knows how the Georgia quarterback situation plays out. That might even work to the Dogs' favor as well. The point here is that because Georgia already has two good quarterbacks, there's nothing wrong with waiting to see if another one falls in its lap by the time National Signing Day on 2018 rolls around. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Great to have you with us here on this Monday. And, of course, if you're listening to me, hope by now you've already done this. But in case you haven't, let me remind you again to please check out DogNation.com. Go up to the Dog Nation tab at the very top of the page, and you'll see our Kroger giveaway there. Check that out because Kroger is giving you a chance to go to the Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. You can check that out there at DogNation.com. Of course, Kroger bringing this to you, not just the spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus heading from Chicago over to South Bend, but also a airfare, tickets for two to the game, lodging. It's all there for you courtesy of Kroger at DogNation.com, so please check that out. And, of course, hope you'll check out Kroger as well, especially when you think about Mother's Day coming up this Sunday. If you're having your mom over for lunch or you're having your spouse's mom over for lunch, whatever you're doing, maybe you're a dad and you're going to cook for your own wife in honor of Mother's Day. That special meal that you're cooking this Sunday, of course, Kroger is going to make that even better for you. Everything that you need for that is right there at Kroger, including fresh flowers as well. Anything that you want to get for your mom to make this Mother's Day special, check it out at Kroger. Kroger.com, of course, the place to do that. Now, before we move on with the show, we'll remind you that coming up in just a moment, Seth Emerson's going to be with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Really good stuff from him. We'll get into the regular football stuff, of course, with Seth, but also Seth wrote a great piece about Trey Battle, the former UGA defensive back, a real touching, inspiring story. Let me also give you the Gator Hater Countdown. We count it down every day here on Dog Nation Daily, now 172 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. If you're like me and you believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost, best way for you to show that is by checking out shopdognation.com and getting your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. We got all the sizes in stock for you there. Hope you'll check it out. We also have free shipping as well. It's right there for you at shopdognation.com. We'll love to see those Gator Hater t-shirts throughout the spring and summer. All right, thank you so much for being here with us on Dog Nation Daily today. We've got a fun show coming up. As promised, also some really good stuff here with Seth Emerson on Trey Battle, and so we'll let you enjoy that as Seth Emerson joins us on Dog Nation Daily right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll welcome in Seth Emerson here to Dog Nation Daily. Seth, thanks for your time on the program today. And let me start with the Trey Battle story. Obviously, well-written piece by you. If people haven't had a chance to read this at DogNation.com, I know they're going to enjoy reading that as well. It kind of goes up here early on this Monday morning. And as I'm reading this and thinking about the fact that, you know, here's a guy that shared a living space with Quentin Moses, shared living space with Paul Oliver, good friends with both these guys, I think back to my own college life and what an emotional time that was for me. And I wasn't famous to a couple hundred thousand people. I wasn't on TV with regularity. And the fact that, you know, Battle lived through his college life with these guys and had to deal with their own passing and in very different ways for very different reasons, that must have been an incredible burden for him to live with. And reading what you wrote, that's certainly the case that you got, that you know, he even contemplated his own suicide. What an amazing story. What stuck out to you as you were writing this?
Well, a lot. One thing that stuck out to me was that Trey Battle, for one thing, was just very reflective and very open and very honest. A lot of the stuff that was in there, the backstory on this, one of the backstories is I met with him and we did the interview, the original interview, like back in February, I want to say. It was before spring football practice. And then I kind of put it aside and I came back to him. And only after spring football practice did I transcribe the interview, and I was reminded of all this stuff that would be in there. And so I had the second interview with him last week, and I said, Trey, just, you know, a lot of times when I interview people and then the story appears in print, they get,
you know, kind of cold feet, second thoughts, or they get stunned at like, oh, I was just telling you this. I didn't know that it would hurt this much to see, or I would be this unwilling to see it in print. And so I went to him and I said, look, you were very blunt with a lot of stuff that a lot of people would consider private. Like, for instance, that story that Mark Richt told of, you know, the night after Paul Oliver's death. Mark Richt, when he told me that, didn't tell me the player and didn't, you know, and I didn't think he should, and I didn't pry. I had no idea that Trey Battle was that player when I was talking with him back in February after Clint Moses' death. But Trey said, though, I'm an open book, and I think that's part of his healing process that has a lot to do with dealing with the aftermath of death of former teammates who were close friends and roommates, but also his kind of post-football life and trying to find his identity. There honestly was a lot there in that piece that didn't make the cut, even as long as the story was.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about this too, Seth, is, you know, apart from him dealing with the Paul Oliver death and dealing with the Quentin Moses death, this is also a guy dealing with something that's common to kind of many people in the same position of, you know, what do you do after football? You know, even for the guys who haven't had close friends pass away, a football career for the most part is a pretty short-term proposition, and there's an element of unfairness to that because these are guys that I'm sure feel wired to play the game, but youth only lasts for so long, and then, you know, you don't have that same opportunity at the NFL level anymore. The way that he has kind of navigated his life now to the point where he's working, I believe it's as an anesthesiologist, if I'm saying that correctly, or, you know...
And as a technician.
Excuse me.
Helps
you're right. I apologize. But that's a great job, and to kind of recalibrate and sort of refocus your life and kind of get to that point, you know, after this, that is also a story of success, in addition to the fact that he's kind of made peace or making peace in the process of doing that with two of his close friends that also passed away. I think that's an important part of this story too.
Yeah, and the thing about, and I've dealt with this, I think I wrote the first Paul Oliver Network story in 2014, and I'm just, this is just a subject that interests me, is to so many people, to people like us in the media, to fans, these guys are just names, maybe a face, they're a jersey number, they're a Wikipedia page, you know, a stat page, and then they retire, and that's it, you know, and if they're done, they don't play much, whenever their pro career is done, if they don't go into something that is still in the business, whether it's coaching or media, as an, you know, announcer or whatever, analyst, then we kind of forget about them. And I've always wondered, like, well, what then? I mean, they've got most of the rest of their lives to live. It's kind of like the Bruce Springsteen Glory Days song.
Yeah.
Like, is that going to be the peak of your life? And Trey grappled with that a little bit, but he is doing very well. He's got a lovely wife and four young kids. I don't know why he has four kids. I think he's crazy for doing that, but that's his. And he's an anesthesiologist technician, which he got in. He wanted to get in the medical field, so he got into that. And so he's got a good job, and he's doing well, but he still had to grapple with a lot of, you know, I think the same kind of stuff that Paul Oliver was dealing with. But he also mentioned, and I kind of briefly got into it too in the story, he talked about CTE, and Trey thinks he probably has a little bit of that too, not as much as Paul Oliver did and some other guys have, but Trey is also coming from it from a, now he works in science and in the medical profession, and so he's looking at it from the outside now to football and saying, well, how can that not actually be the case with a whole lot of us? So yeah. Trey's just a very thoughtful, reflective person. You sit down with him and he makes you think, and you know, he's symptomatic of what a lot of football players go through when their careers end, but on another level, he's also, I mean, he's a credit to himself, but I think he's also a credit to the University of Georgia program that he produced, you know, that he came from that, because he's someone who is doing well, but he did have to have a support system to help get him through some stuff.
Well, the other thing I'll say about this too, Seth, is, and as you know, I'm the kind of guy that I'm more than happy to talk about the on-field legacy of Mark Richt, what he did well, what he maybe could have done differently. But the one thing that's, I think, indisputable is the fact that the Paul Oliver Network and the authentic, genuine concern that Richt had for his former players and what their path was going to be once football was over. That's not up for debate. That is an incredible testament, I think, to Rick personally and to UGA generally, and the fact that I think some of that still lives on at UGA now, that is something that I do think all Georgia fans should be proud of, is that Rick really seemed to understand just how important that was. He truly seemed to get it in that respect.
Yeah, and the thing about, you know, I don't think anyone doubts the Mark Richt thing, but when I was talking to him for the PO Network story way back in the summer of 2014, during that interview, one of his former players, and I forget at the moment who it was, one of his former players called him. And it was a guy who had played, like, his career had finished like 5 or 6 years before that and not a very recognizable name. And Rick took the call and said, yeah, all right, you know, I'm with someone right now, let me call you back. Well, unless, you know, Rick intentionally planted that call for when a media member was there, which I don't think he did. That was just another example. So, oh, yeah, this is very sincere. And one thing I couldn't get into that story, but I'm hoping to explore further, is, you know, Trey also mentioned that he went to a PO Network event at UGA at the indoor facility where Kirby Smart spoke. And he told me what Kirby said, and Trey said he was really taken by it, too. And he thinks that Kirby is taking the ball and rolling with it and running with it on the PO Network thing too, and that it's going to continue to live on. Rick is kind of helping from Miami, like just with, you know, make a phone call here or there if he has to, but he's going to help it financially. But that it didn't die just because Rick's got fired and went to Miami, that Kirby's picking up the ball now.
Kind of awkward to transition from this conversation to regular football, but there are a few things that I do want to ask you about, and I doubt that you've read a lot of 2018 mock drafts. I don't know if that's been a big part of your off-season preparation agenda, but I do think these things are kind of fun. And what I do notice about the top of the 2018 mock draft, Seth, is a lot of underclassmen quarterbacks expected to go really high in next year's draft, which gets me thinking about the 2019 draft when Jacob Eason would finish his junior season and be eligible to go. The point I'm trying to make here is that this 2017 season for Eason is going to tell a lot about if he is on that Matthew Stafford path, right, who became a very good player in 2007, the kind of guy that you could see going after his junior year in 2008. This is really the swing year for Eason of, is he kind of on that path a lot of people assumed he would be on, or is he that guy that has to wait until he's a senior to even be drafted at all? We'll learn a lot about that from him this season, right?
Yeah, and I think the sophomore year is always critical. It's you know, for some guys, it's the most critical. It was for Stafford. It showed that, oh, yeah, he's the real deal after some doubts as a freshman, and maybe that'll happen with Eason. For others, it, you know, could swing the other way, or, you know, maybe for even more, it will take until longer. But I think when I projected out when he got here, I always saw him as a three-year guy, and that was part of the attraction for someone like Jake Fromm is, yeah, maybe I'll sit a couple years, but it's only going to be two. And, you know, I don't need to redshirt at all. But, you know, we don't know until you actually play, you know. And so there's other guys out there. I mean, there's Jalen Hurts, the way the sport of football is going, or his ability is going to be much more valued when he's coming out as a junior. I mean, Jake Bentley, I don't know if he's as the same kind of pro material. He's also younger, so maybe he's in the following class. But there's a lot of football to be played. But if Eason has, you know, a big sophomore year, then NFL scouts are going to be looking at him because he is still that prototypical, like 6'5" with a big arm guy that they love in the NFL.
I've been enjoying your kind of look backs at the spring and the different depth chart position battles, and you've been kind of focusing on the defense at DogNation.com for the last few days. And in particular on the star position, one of the guys that got a pretty strong look there this spring, the freshman D'Angelo Gibbs. Is it safe to say in the early going that Gibbs has kind of lived up to the hype for one of those freshmen that Georgia fans were excited about seeing on the field this year? Certainly the evidence we saw from the spring is that's probably going to come true this fall, right? I mean, it looks like Gibbs, one way or another, is in a position to get some significant playing time, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, if he wins the star position job, then yeah. After that, it becomes a matter of how much are they going to sub, are there going to be injuries? Because the way I see it, you've got four guys who I'd be shocked if they're not starting. Malcolm Parrish and DeAndre Baker at cornerback, and Dom Sanders and Aaron Davis at safety, with the possibility of Aaron Davis goes to star, which would then, you know, the scenario where no freshman is starting against App State or Notre Dame is Aaron Davis going to star and J.R. Reed starting at safety. that's something they've given a hard look. But D'Angelo Gibbs and Tyreek McGee, the rising sophomore, have gotten a long look at the star, kind of competing with Aaron Davis there. So Aaron Davis is kind of the flex guy. And so there's a lot of moving parts back there, but it'll be interesting. I think what we discovered in the spring, and things over the course of a five week spring happen so gradually that, you know, we sometimes need to take a step back and say, what did we actually, you know, what would have really surprised us that we just take for granted now if we'd said it before spring started? And one of them, I don't know that it would be a surprise, but that D'Angelo Gibbs is in the mix to start and Richard LeCount isn't yet. That was something that happened in the spring. And I think a lot of that is just because of depth. I mean, Dom Sanders and Aaron Davis are seniors, and so is Malcolm Parrish. So after this year, even if these guys don't play a lot now, there's going to be a lot of playing time coming in 2018.
Something you also wrote about, and I know you had a chance to ask Kirby about this after G-Day, it sounds like right now that Georgia's moving forward with Mecole Hardman as an offensive player, and at least for now, not really as a defensive player, correct?
Yeah, and that's another thing that it's the same kind of thing where it happens so gradually that, you know, we kind of take it for granted now. It's like, yeah, he's going to be on offense. They're not saying it officially yet. But when we haven't seen any signs that they're continuing to try to develop him at cornerback. And the reason that's important is because he didn't play cornerback in high school. And that was why he didn't play last year at cornerback, because he was going through that adjustment. So if there was really any commitment to get him to develop him as a corner, they wouldn't have stunted that development by not playing him there this spring.
Yeah.
So and with all those guys they signed, Amir Speed, Stokes, et cetera. I think the writing's on the wall that he's going to play offense. And I at this point, I'd be surprised if he gets much work at defense at all.
You have said this before, that this has a chance to be not just a good Georgia defense, that's what it's been the last 4 years, maybe a very good Georgia defense, maybe even great a possibility. And while I believe that is also true, I don't see the ceiling as being nearly as high for this Georgia secondary in particular. I don't see much of a chance this is a great Georgia secondary this year. Great core of linebackers, maybe. Really good defensive line, almost for sure. But I don't think the ceiling is nearly as high for the Georgia secondary. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I tend to agree with that. I think the reason this defense has a chance to be very good, but let's not go to like Alabama great, you know, LSU great of 2011, that kind of defense, is because the front seven has some very elite talent that will be highly drafted in the NFL as soon as the next draft, and the secondary is experienced. I don't know that Dom Sanders is turning into just a very good college player. I don't know that he's a first-round pick. Kind of same goes, Aaron Davis is going to leave Georgia, having been one of the most successful walk-ons, along with Trey Battle, in program history. But, you know, where's he going to be drafted, if at all? Is he an all-SEC guy? Kind of same for Malcolm Parrish, cornerback. So that's the kind of thing where is this going to be a completely shut-down secondary that's going to make this a completely shut-down defense? You know, probably not. If they're playing a very elite passing team, they're probably still going to give up some yards. And so I would tend to agree that it's a good secondary. I mean, it's good enough. Those guys back there are good enough that they shouldn't just bench those guys and play all the freshmen, you know, to start developing now. That's their best chance to win this year, is to play those veterans. But the ceiling for that secondary isn't as high as, you know, the great defenses we've seen in the SEC in the past 10 years or so.
Let me squeeze in a quick final question, if you don't mind. I thought one of the statements that you made when you kind of looked at the Georgia linebackers was that from a productivity standpoint, Davin Bellamy and Lorenzo Carter have been almost the same player, and yet I think most NFL scouts view Carter in kind of a different realm than Bellamy. With all due respect to Bellamy, I just think that Carter is viewed as the better pro prospect. Do you think that that causes a light to come on for him this year, maybe the extra motivation of potentially a lot of money on the line from this season, that all of a sudden we see him separate himself not just from Bellamy but a lot of players in the SEC, and that maybe he finally looks like the player that a lot of Georgia fans thought he might be coming out of high school?
Maybe, but I hate to psychoanalyze guys like this, especially someone like Lorenzo Carter, who, you know, I'm not sure that Lorenzo Carter is the type of guy that, you know, he's when you say the money, I'm just kind of grabbing onto one phrase you said. You know, he's a guy, he comes from a good family. He's a guy who has other interests. You know, he played the cello growing up, whatever. It's never been all about the brass ring, all about football, you know, as in this must be my only thing. Lorenzo Carter is going to be one of those guys who, whenever his football career ends, he's going to go do something else and he's going to be great. He's going to be fine. But having said that, he is still an athletic specimen who I think, while he and Davin Bellamy have kind of been mirror images as far as productivity, NFL teams are going to look at him and somebody is going to say, and let's say he had come out after this year. So I don't know how this year is going to develop for Lorenzo Carter. He may blow up and all 32 teams want him. But if he had come out after this year, probably wouldn't have been a first-round pick, but somebody would have looked at him and said, in our system, that guy is going to be really good. And it only takes one of those teams to do that, and Lorenzo Carter is the type of player who's going to get NFL teams to say that.
Hey, Seth, we really appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, and I hope that folks will go check out the piece that you wrote on Trey Battle. It is, I think, the University of Georgia in its best light, its best foot forward, and, of course, it's great to see what Trey Battle is doing in his life right now. So for UGA fans, remember what a good player he was for Mark Richt's Georgia Bulldogs. I know they'll love hearing what he's got going on in his life now. Thanks for riding it. Thanks for being with us in the program today, and, of course, we'll look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thanks, Brad.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
And good stuff there from Seth Emerson. Great to have him on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, great to have all of you with us as well. And if you like Dog Nation Daily, I hope you'll also check me out later on today, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on SEC Country Live. Myself, the former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson, we'll talk about everything going on in the Southeastern Conference on the SEC Country's Facebook page. It is SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. On the SEC Country Facebook page. Hope you will check that out there. All right, a few stories I want to get to here as far as the SEC Through goes, and I'm sure we'll talk about these today here on SEC Country as well. Josh Smith, a Tennessee wide receiver, he has been charged in a domestic assault situation. Now, this is kind of a weird scenario in that when you hear that phrase, domestic assault charge, what you actually find out is the situation is a little different than the charges might sound. Smith, the domestic assault was actually against a man. Let's just be honest here. Domestic assault has become sort of language in the media to mean a man hitting a woman. But in this case, the person that Smith is alleged to have beaten up is actually another man, his roommate there at Tennessee. And the details online about this are kind of foggy about exactly what might have happened here. But that's what Smith has going on here. Obviously, it's very early in this process. No word yet on kind of what this might mean for his situation there with the University of Tennessee. But he's obviously dealing with that. And, of course, you know, this is that time of year where college fans, for the most part, kind of hold their breath about what might come up for their own players, their own teams. Obviously, some of this stuff is serious situations, but for the average fan, this just becomes a scenario where you worry about having none of your guys getting in trouble. And at least in this case, Smith at Tennessee is dealing with something that will have to be sorted out to figure what's going on there. Better news, though, for a couple South Carolina players that were alleged to have been in part of a bar fight in a Columbia bar going back to a couple of weeks ago. Deebo Samuel, the wide receiver, Sky Moore, they've apparently both been cleared here, according to some reports coming out of the state, the newspaper in Columbia. Now, the Samuel story was that he had told Will Muschamp basically at the beginning of last week that he wasn't there at the bar, didn't do this. Muschamp quickly came to his defense, and as it turns out, that's true. And now, I guess my understanding is, based on these reports, that Sky Moore has also been cleared here as well. Which might seem like a sort of a strange scenario. Both guys were mentioned in the police report, but it is important to remember here that the police reports are essentially nothing else but a recitation of what the eyewitness accounts were. And while I don't think anyone's going to intentionally lie to defame Samuel or Moore, eyewitness accounts are notoriously wrong. You know, eyewitness accounts do not hold up as much as you might think. So in this particular case, maybe this is an example of an eyewitness account thinking one thing, but the actual truth being different, because it seems like an open and shut situation here coming out of South Carolina, not just lawyers and representatives of the football program saying this, but I guess the media has now confirmed that Samuel and Moore were not a part of this fight. The reason why this matters is because Jake Bentley at South Carolina needs all the help he can get in terms of wide receivers. Samuel certainly provides that. Sky Moore, while he didn't play last year, was the leading tackler for South Carolina for the 2 years before that. So this is good news for South Carolina here. The two high-profile players have been cleared in what was a police investigation into a bar fight. Kind of an interesting scenario coming out of LSU here where there were reports out there. We talked about some of Lane Kiffin's words last week, but that maybe Kiffin to LSU was pretty close here, that there was a strong consideration that Lane Kiffin would have taken that LSU offensive coordinator job, and maybe it almost happened, which means that for me you have to include LSU into a group that you also include Alabama with, that if things go wrong this year, don't think that Lane Kiffin won't notice that, and don't think Lane Kiffin won't be talking about that, talking about the LSU offense and how it could have been different with him in charge, the same way he'll talk about the Alabama offense and how it would be different if he was still in charge. Kiffin, in a lot of ways, like the Southern version of Jim Harbaugh. Two guys that are just really good at getting attention for themselves. Kiffin knows how to do that and knows that it's personally good for him to get attention. Even if sometimes it's attention for a weird thing or the wrong thing, Kiffin knows that all publicity is good publicity. So this connection that continues to exist between him and almost taking the LSU offensive coordinator job, that just means that Kiffin's going to be speaking publicly about LSU a lot this fall. I think you can count on that. Another LSU story that comes out here is that it looks like Arden Key, now we all expected this, but in June, Key is apparently going to return to the LSU program. So the best returning player in the SEC, certainly on paper the best on the defensive side of the ball, he will be back at LSU in June and ready to play this fall. And that's a big get back for the Tigers there. One more story to get to for our SEC through. Anwar Richardson had an interesting tweet that the timeline for Malik Zaire, the Notre Dame quarterback, to announce his transfer spot. It's down to Texas and Wisconsin and Florida. Well, the timeline for Zaire to make this announcement is actually scheduled to take place before the spring meetings, the SEC spring meetings, which take place in Destin, Florida, towards the end of May. Zaire wants to make his announcement, I want to say maybe by the end of next week, which would be just before the SEC spring meetings take place. And the reason why that matters is because it's the spring meetings here where the SEC might have a chance to change the rule that's currently in place that would prohibit Zaire from going to Florida. Right now, Florida can't take a graduate transfer because of the academic issues a couple of its previous graduate transfers had. That rule's probably going to be changed, but if Zaire announces before the rule is changed, Florida can't take him, which means Zaire would end up going somewhere else. I think changing the rule is basically just a it's a non-issue. It's going to happen. If Zaire makes the announcement before that, it's simply because he wants to go to another school. I don't think anybody's worried about this rule being changed. I think it will be changed if that's what Florida wants and needs. But in this case, though, Zaire may just see a better opportunity for him at another school, maybe Wisconsin or quite possibly Texas, although you can make a case that the Texas quarterback depth right now is even deeper than in Florida, so don't know why he would choose the Longhorns over the Gators. But nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. All right, thank you so much for being with us on Dog Nation Daily today. A couple of recruiting stories I want to get to as we wrap up the program here. You may have seen over the weekend that Quay Walker, the former high school teammate of Markavius Big Cat Bryant, who has had a weird relationship with Georgia. You know, at one point in time, Bryant was thought to be a strong Georgia lean. Walker has had a weird relationship with Georgia, and then he was one time thought to be a strong Georgia lean. But then Bryant chooses Auburn, and then Walker was thought to be close with Auburn. And then the situation with Auburn seemed to sour somewhat, and then yet Georgia didn't kind of slide back in that picture, didn't seem to take up the void that was once left by Auburn. At one point in time, it looked like Alabama had emerged as the leader for Walker. Then Walker over the weekend gives out another top five. In this case, and where Georgia had once been in the top five no more, that's now South Carolina's spot. So we'll see how this plays out, but it looks like Georgia not in the mix anymore for a Quay Walker, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.